agreement of my colleagues, I'd like to let them come up to the table, council table. Very good. Yes, ma'am. Come on up. Take that seat there. Yes. Okay. Ms. McNichol, if you could sort of mark the sign-in sheet that we had an interpreter here for the gentleman, and maybe get her to sign that so that we can at least have some record of who appeared for the benefit of the gentleman. Ma'am, if you could come up and sign this piece of paper for us, please. And I thank you for your patience.
Sit over there. They're not so distracted.
They got to plug in.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, ma'am, and I appreciate you coming up and seeing us. I'm sure this is your first time in the Court of Appeals, so you can put this on your resume. You know, experienced interpreter in the Court of Appeals of Virginia. All right. You've been sworn, ma'am. All right. I'm sorry. We'll give you a whole 15 minutes back.
If you could just cut right to just exactly what financial burden does the employer and insurance company suffer as a result of the dismissal?
Absolutely. Number one, it incurs attorney's fees, my fees for monitoring the case. It also incurs fees for the division, the corporate headquarters in Phoenix, and the third-party administrator have to continue to monitor the case. My fees are exact. There are additional monetary costs.
Let me stop you there. There is no claim pending, is there?
No, there is no claim pending, but I have an argument, and that is like the press case, the Daily Press versus Commonwealth of Virginia, which I'll address in a second, but I want to finish telling you about what the costs are. The other costs are the monetary reserves. Because the claim is still potentially pending, there is the corporate and the local division have to keep certain monetary amounts in reserve. That also affects the local division's bottom line, whether or not they are able to give safety bonuses and executive bonuses for each and every employee.
But these are basically administrative circumstances and don't relate necessarily to the merits of the case. Is that correct? Yes, as part of the administrator of the whole circumstance that we're talking about, the employer has to monitor all kinds of cases that are out there, potential cases that have been filed, cases that have been adjudicated, cases that are on appeal. So basically the costs that you're talking about are costs that are going to be reasonably incurred by any good insurance company to perfect their position, is it? Look at it in the form of a punitive measure.
There are those costs and that is both the burden and the preservation of the legal rights.
Is there any case law that says that a commission or this court should be party to punitive actions taken against the claimant because of something, just because there's a disagreement as to how the case should be dismissed?
Well, the discovery cases say that the court had
what is the standard of review of the commission's decision not to dismiss with prejudice?
In your brief, you suggested that it's de novo, but I actually have some concern about that.
I think it's de novo when you're interpreting a statute. When it's just the...
What statute are we interpreting?
The burden of proof on the claim.
It's not a statute. It's the rule of the commission that allows them to dismiss with or without prejudice as they deem fit.
No, I would. That's just the discovery aspect of the case. The statute is the statute of the workers' comp. It's the very statute that requires a 65.2 of Amendment
326.
That requires the claimant to he carries the burden of proof to prevail on there to prove each and every aspect of his case that arose out of in the course of his employment, etc.
But that statute doesn't address the commission's authority to dismiss a claim without prejudice. This hearing never began, did it?
It did. The deputy commissioner, Stivic, commenced the hearing. We withdrew our motion for discovery.
Was there any evidence presented?
Pardon me?
Any evidence presented?
She would not permit any evidence to be permitted.
So it's kind of, it's tantamount to, you know, appearing in court for a trial and the jeopardy never attaches.
With all due respect, I don't practice criminal law, so I can't jeopardy.
But the commission dismisses cases without prejudice all the time.
For discovery abuses.
They dismiss it under the rules for all kinds of reasons.
Well, that's true, but in this case, we were entitled to go forward that day and either have the claimant's case fail because he didn't present his proof, or put on our case of the affirmative defense and prevail on the merits, and that would have closed the case within 30 days of the decision being rendered. And you asked earlier, is this case over? This case is not over. Not only...
Yeah, I'll accept you are an aggrieved party, but I'm still having some trouble on the abuse of discretion versus de novo review claim that you're making.
I think that the discovery, if it was merely the discovery issue, then it is abuse of discretion. And I would argue here that in no case can you have more contempt of a court order than you have in this case. It's abject failure to answer any discovery whatsoever. It's abject failure to respond to motion to compel. It's abject failure
What does Commission Rule 1:12 say? Expressly permits the commission in the exercise of its discretion to act sui sponte to dismiss a claim with or without prejudice as a means of enforcing its provisions or act. That's quoting Jenkins versus Webb.
Yes, but in this case, I'm sorry, not only is it an abuse of their discretion to as I was starting to say, in this case, there cannot be any more contempt than failing to answer discovery, failing to answer responding to motions, failing to appear at the hearing, and after the fact, sending in a handwritten, not that it's in for handwritten, but sending in some sort of thing that says, now I want to contest this case. So there can't be any more contempt of the other court orders by failing to do all of that.
Which sort of bleeds into the question that we're raising. If the commission had determined, after all of these things that you highlight, which are important things, that the appropriate remedy would be to dismiss with prejudice, we would review that on an abuse of discretion standard and make the determination as whether, in light of all the circumstances you presented, whether or not that is an abuse of discretion. And I would think instinctively we'd probably say, no, that is not an abuse of discretion.
I apologize, Your Honor.
That's fine. That's fine. No, I understand. You can come wherever you're comfortable.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to hear you.
Yes, ma'am. If the commission had taken into consideration all of the things that you had raised regarding its failure to comply with discovery, failure to appear at the hearing, and all these other things that had happened over the course of litigation, and had said, based upon everything that is presented here, we're going to dismiss this case with prejudice. On an abuse of discretion standard, we would take a look at it and decide whether under the circumstances the commission's determination to do that was an abuse of discretion or not. And I think likely we would say that it was, because there's nothing to discount it. In this case, they did nothing to discount their determination that it should be dismissed with prejudice. If we go the other way and listen to the case and say, okay, on an abuse of discretion standard, whether it was appropriate for the commission to dismiss it without prejudice was right or wrong, aren't we still having to use that same standard? And as long as there is a basis, whatever it is, for the commission to exercise its authority, aren't we sort of stuck with that?
Well, I think despite the benevolent intent of the statute, there still has to be, the employer still has to be able to vigorously defend the cases it believes are outside the statute. And the only way we can do that is to enter in discovery and vigorously defend. And vigorously defend costs a significant amount of money. And back to your point about, you know, it is not necessarily just within the statute of limitations, because I'll give you an example. I had a case, I think it was, the name was Delmage, D-E-L-M-A-G-E, and they filed a case, I believe it was 15, almost 18 years after the injury, and I immediately filed a motion to dismiss based on statute of limitations. The deputy commissioner took it under advisement, said she wouldn't rule until the hearing 6 months from now, and then therefore we had to go undergo discovery, find all those medical records that were 18, 20 years old, go find these witnesses that were 18, 20 years old. It was significantly difficult to put a case together on the merits.
But you can't prevent somebody from filing a claim that you have an absolute defense to. You have to defend every claim that's filed, right, whether it has merit or not.
That is true, but we should have been able to win on a motion to dismiss.
Does the record, and I want to underline record, does the record reflect that the claimant was non-English speaking?
I believe he's required to speak English to be employed, but there is obviously a difficulty with that language. I don't think he speaks it fluently.
Does the record reflect that? I mean, I don't want to talk about what's going on in the courtroom right now.
I believe that he filed after the hearing was dismissed without prejudice, he filed a one-page Spanish position statement, I guess, that sort of said that I wasn't at fault and there wasn't an investigation, I believe is the gist of it. I have a copy of it.
Anything else, ma'am?
I was telling you about the, I believe you agreed that we're approved. And it's not moved, so, no.
All right, thank you, ma'am. Sir, the matter has been presented. Because of the rules that we have in this court, you have not filed a brief, so you're not in a position to address the court on this issue. What will happen next is that because this is an appellate court, these three judges that you see here will take the matter under advisement and consider what we're going to do. This is not like a traditional trial where people take the witness stand and testify. Rather, this court is reviewing the record that was presented at the original trial and to see if there was anything that we need to correct one way or the other. Typically, we'll get a decision to you within 90 days or so. Do you have any questions? Un momento, por favor. Un momento. Okay. We're not allowed to consider that, and I understand that you'd want to communicate that to us, but we're not allowed to consider that. The question that I asked, which may have been better asked, was whether or not you had any questions about what we did here in court today. Can we get an address for you? A current address? Ms. McNichol, as he hands that up, can you make sure Ms. Ryan gets a copy of that also?
Martin Drive, 124 Martin Drive.
Okay. All right, sir, we thank you for the address that you provided. We have a tradition in this court where we will come down and shake the hands of the people presenting. Because of the unusual nature of the case, we'll also come down and shake the hand of the interpreter and you.